This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Jordan Renan going to join us in a moment. We'll get into the Yankees and what Boone and Cashman had to say yesterday, and then we'll do a little CMT. So very important hour here on DCR with you on 98.7 ESPN. Let's bring him in. Friend of the show. Friend of, I mean, everyone. He has a lot of friends. He is the great Jordan Renan. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning. Yeah, you got a lot of friends. There we go. That's a new one.
I've heard. You're a very social guy, and you have a lot of friends out there.
Okay. I guess I'll take that. Better to have friends than be hated.
There you go. All right. So we talked about this earlier on the show. No more, well, they were close and competed. The Giants have to win this game this weekend. I don't want to hear about, well, you know, it just came down to a play here or a play there, and Joe Judge has the respect of these guys, and Daniel Jones is making strides. I don't want to say must win because I think that's ridiculous, but this is a game the Giants need to win on Sunday.
Yeah, well, Dave, the other weeks we look at it and we say the Giants could be out-talented, right? They're not a very talented team, especially without Saquon Barkley. If we all had to sit here and guess what their win total would have been and at the beginning of the year and you said no Saquon Barkley, we would all pick probably a pretty low number. So this was expected, but they're finally playing a team, and I'm going to make sure not to call them the R word because I've been doing that lately all week. Can't help it. But the Washington football team, you look at their roster, you look at the Giants roster, and you could at least, I mean, come away saying they're equitable. And you could even, I mean, depending on how you want to judge it, you could say the Giants have a better roster. Yeah. So this is the week you need to see the results turn into a victory because, quite frankly, you look at the team on the other side of the ball, what don't they have? What's their biggest hole? They don't have a quarterback. If we want to sit here and say the Giants have a quarterback and Daniel Jones is the guy, then he should be the team that doesn't have a quarterback. Because the reality is if you take a big picture look at the Giants, so far this season, they've lost to what? Two backups and then Mitchell Trubisky, who got benched. And that's what the Giants have done so far, right? Andy Dalton. Why am I drawing a blank on the other backup? Who defeats?
So Nick Mullins.
And then they lost to Mitch Trubisky, who is the backup. So now you're playing, what, Alex Smith or whoever, you know, the Washington football team is going to start. Daniel Jones needs to outplay that guy and produce a victory.
He starred in the 1987 American romantic comedy Roxanne, Jordan Renan. <Yeah.
But
oh, you're unbelievable. Oh, God.
Where did that come from? Out of left field.
Oh, my God. By the way, great movie. Boy. Steve Martin. Great, great movie. Daryl Hannah.
Oh, my goodness.
Terrific flick. You are really, though.
This is probably my last time ever on the show.
I wouldn't blame you. Honestly, if you hung up right now and we never heard from you again, I wouldn't blame you.
Jordan, going back to the quarterback conversation, you mentioned all the backups and everything else. What right now, I mean, Canty is fed up with all the turnovers, but what is the conversation inside that building right now about Daniel Jones?
I mean, I think it's where it was at the beginning of the year, right? We just need to get him to play better. We need to get him that internal clock to move faster. Even if you look at that turnover the other day, and I'm with Chris, the turnovers, I just can't get over it. He felt the guy. He knew he was coming from behind. You got to not turn the ball over. I know he was pressured right away. I know his line is bad. But 31 turnovers in 17 starts is just ridiculous. You're talking about two turnovers a game just for your quarterback, basically. It almost gives you no chance to win if you're going to turn the ball. You're going to start the game with two turnovers from your quarterback. I mean, think about the pressure that then puts on your defense. So I think the Giants are still optimistic about Daniel Jones. They're bullish on him. Quarterbacks coach Jerry Schaplinski, he said he didn't see any panic in him. He totally believes in him. And I really do think the Giants do believe in him, that they can fix this and they can get this right because there's still those flashes. And they see it. They see a lot him do a lot of good. They go back and watch the tape, and they see a lot of good things. Think of that last drive alone, right? That play he made where he rolled out and threw the ball to Slayton, you're like, there you go. That's the kind of play that he can make. These are the winning kind of plays. But then on the same drive, that third down, he rolls out, and essentially Deion Lewis is open, and whether you want to say Lewis should have sat down or whatever it is, they're not on the same page, and it should be a completion for a first down. That drive should have still been going. He needed like 30, 25 yards at that point to get Graham Gano's field goal range, which is pretty much everywhere right now because he's their best player on their team, and it didn't happen. So it's really just the inconsistency, and I think the organization and the coaches really believe, okay, it's our job. We can get him playing up to that level where he's more consistent. And if he's more consistent, I think everybody would believe that he can be a top-level quarterback if he could show what he does in flashes on a more consistent basis.
Well, that's not a good place to be when you're talking about the kicker being the best player on the team.
Not the first time.
How do you think you're 0-5, Chris? They're 0-5. How do you get there?
I get it, Jordan. I get it. And listen, I know when you go back and look at the tape, it's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. But you mentioned the quarterback coach in his comments earlier this week. He said he saw nothing that would be a cause for concern. I'm sorry, but all of the turnovers that we've seen from Daniel Jones in his 17 starts is cause for concern. I don't understand why the organization is not willing to acknowledge that and at least try to hold them accountable in public. I'm sure they're saying things in private, but publicly something needs to be said about their quarterback turning the ball over at this rate.
Yeah, that's the approach that they're going to take. I mean, it's been pretty clear from the start. He is not, remember?
We're going to coddle our players? That's what we're going to do?
He wouldn't even say anybody's name for the first 3 months. He didn't name one player. He didn't even say Saquon Barkley. He wouldn't say the name Saquon Barkley, and that they're going to build their offense around him. And that this was so this is their approach. That is how they're going to handle it. I agree with you. I don't understand what's wrong about having accountability publicly. The reality is Daniel Jones knows it. So what's the point of not saying it?
That's what I don't understand. Jordan, I want to ask you a question about the Washington football team. Who's Patrick Graham's defense getting ready for? Is it Alex Smith or Kyle Allen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're really 100% sure. I mean, obviously they're not 100% sure.
They announced Kyle Allen was starting.
They said if he's healthy right now, he's going to be a starter, right?
He's healthy, though. Is he healthy?
If he's healthy. No, they're saying that's still a question mark.
He had full participation in practice yesterday, so I would imagine it's going to be Kyle Allen.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So there we go. We got Kyle Allen. But still, I mean, does it really matter? I mean, is Kyle Allen so much better than Alex Smith? I mean, who are they throwing out there? I mean, there's plenty of film on Kyle Allen. He started for Ron Rivera in Carolina. He is what he is. He's a guy who, quite frankly, does a lot of what Daniel Jones does. He can make a couple good plays here or there, but he turns the ball over plenty. He fumbles the ball a lot. So if I'm Patrick Graham and I'm the Giants defense, I'm looking to, and I think this will be the case. We're going to see a lot of Marcus Golden, right? He is now, ironically, think about it, the Giants didn't really want him, and now they need him. And now he's going to be playing almost 100% of the snaps, 90% of the snaps, along with Kyler Fackrell. And they're going to say to those two guys, we need you to make plays. And it'll be interesting. You know that I saw this, and I was kind of surprised. I was looking at the next-gen stats. Marcus Golden, who has barely played this season, right? He already leads this team in quarterback pressures.
Wow.
With 10, which isn't a great number, but, I mean, he leads the team with quarterback pressures. But what Patrick Graham has done is they've done a good job scheming up pressure. They have a bunch of guys with 2 sacks. They're getting sacks from different positions, inside linebacker. They're blitzing from the corners, from their slot guys, from their safeties, and bringing pressure from a lot of different directions. I think that's what you would see against Kyle Allen and the Washington football team, bringing things from different directions to try and confuse this guy.
And with the Achilles injury to Clemson's Lorenzo Carter, he's not going to be able to.
Really, Dave? Really? Really? You just couldn't let that one.
Jordan, let that one go. Us here on 98.7. Jordan.
You guys are on fire today. You guys really are.
Andrew Thomas, I mean, you know, he started out looking decent first game, maybe two, and feels like he's heading in the wrong direction. I know that a lot of the things are against him now, you know, starting at left tackle right off the bat, no Nate Solder, no training camp, all that kind of stuff. But is there reason for worry with him, or is it just too early in rookie year and you can't be that concerned?
Nah, I mean, when you look at the performance, I think there's reason for worry. I mean, he's, by my count, given up, like, you know, more than 5 sacks, close to 7, depending on how you want to, you know, grade him out. So I don't see how you could look at that and be like, oh, sure, he's a rookie. Like, there's other rookies around the league, and, yeah, they have rough games. But he's having, you know, rough game after game after game. And I think this is actually a big week for him because remember the last time these two teams played, the Giants won, and a lot of people actually think they lost because they won. Because the result of that was that the Washington football team got Chase Young, and the New York Giants didn't. And now instead they got Andrew Thomas. So now we're going to see the two of them matched up against each other. The noise is really going to start to build if it hasn't already about Andrew Thomas. If he goes out there and just gets dominated by Chase Young, I mean, he can't have that happen. He needs to play a good game this week. Otherwise, the pressure is going to build on him. And you know what? I'd be a little concerned that we might end up being in that Eric Flowers situation. You don't want to go there because we're still only six games into his career. But he's actually played at that level. I mean, you want to give the rookie a benefit of the doubt. I understand. But to be fair, he's playing at the level that Eric Flowers did his rookie year. And we all sat here and we said, he's a rookie. He's showing grit. He shows toughness. You know, but even though he's getting beat, I see potential. Well, he's got to produce it on the field.
I mean, does this just highlight? I know Giants fans and Dave in particular didn't, you know, they don't love Nate Solder or how much money you paid Nate Solder. But I mean, this really highlights, you know, how much better it would have been for the Giants if you could have had Nate Solder play left tackle and ease Andrew Thomas in a right tackle. No,
absolutely. You know what? It's kind of funny because when I bring up Eric Flowers, I don't know if you remember what happened with Eric Flowers. So his rookie year, he's supposed to be the right tackle, right? And then what happens? Will Beattie tore his, I think it was his pec, in the offseason program. So Eric Flowers then has to be thrust into left tackle, and it was just downhill from there. So, I mean, it really is a parallel situation. Really high draft pick. I mean, Andrew Thomas is even higher. You would just hope that he has the mental toughness, and I'm not sure Eric Flowers did at the time, to be able to handle the New York criticism and turn around. Instead, he kind of spiraled in the wrong direction. And that's why I think this week is a big week for Andrew Thomas, because he has been under pressure a little bit. It's the buzz is starting to build about his play, and now he gets a chance. Okay, everyone's going to be watching you this week. You against Chase Young, pick two against pick four. Hold your own, play a good game, and settle it down and show them that you can bounce back, which Eric Flowers wasn't able to do.
Jordan, we saw a reaction from around the sports world to the Dak Prescott injury. What is Logan Ryan and the other Giants players saying about what happened to Dak on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, Logan Ryan after the game was really, I mean, his comments, he couldn't believe that it happened. He said he was almost defensive in fact that, hey, it was just a normal football play. There's really nothing I can do. You could feel the remorse kind of from him, that fact that he ended up being the guy that was involved in the play. And I know they're football players and we all think they're machines and injuries just, you know, you could brush right over it, but you could tell that it affected him to see. I mean, it was gruesome, right? We're sitting there saying, and his ankle's basically facing the wrong way, and they all saw that. And I don't know, I mean, I did think it was kind of awkward. I mean, I'm sitting at home because we're watching games on TV too, but Tony Romo, did anyone else besides me?
Yeah, we talked about it.
You know, kind of it's awkward. Not his calf, Tony. It's not
hopefully
his calf.
Hopefully it's just a cramp, Jim.
Hopefully it's just a cramp. You don't want to laugh, but I mean, it was like, Tony, his ankle is facing the other direction. Like, so, but no, but the Giants players, they saw that. And after the game, you could tell that, I mean, they to a man, they all came and they're like, yo, I want to send, you know, my thoughts and prayers out to Dak. And it was almost like they're like, oh yeah, and Lorenzo Carter. Like, it's almost like that injury to Dak stood out even more. Like, Lorenzo Carter was lost for the year. They knew that too. But the Dak injury was so gruesome, and everybody knows the situation he's in, that it just hits those guys hard, because Chris, you know it. It's a fraternity, right?
Yep.
Players are a fraternity, and they watch when other players get paid. They watch that Dak Prescott has been going back and forth with the whole contract situation, and they feel for a guy when they say, oh, my God, because this is the risk, right? If you don't sign that deal, that's your risk, is you the injury part of it. And that's why teams have leverage in football, because you have to say, oh, am I going to take $10 million or am I going to go risk it, and my ankle could be turned the other direction, and I, you know, who knows where my career goes from there. So players really feel that, and you could tell that immediately from guys like Logan Ryan, Daniel Jones, really almost all the Giants, especially the defensive players that were standing there looking at it. And then Jason Garrett, and obviously Mark Colombo said he's really close with him. And he was just distraught, he said, basically. I'm paraphrasing, and he didn't use that word. But and that he, you know, has reached out to Dak and talked to him, and he knows that he's going to come back. But you can tell it hit this team pretty hard because it was an ugly injury.
It was awful. A terrible injury. Jordan Manon with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I heard Dabo Swinney very upset about the Lorenzo Carter injury down in South Carolina. as well.
You're a bad guy, Dave. You're a bad guy. This is years ago. You're a bad guy.
But I'm sorry.
You're still bringing it up.
Last one from me. Joe Judge, what's your take? I mean, and the Giants' kind of internal take on him. 0-5, we know that. It's been a really brutal start record-wise. But what's the feeling around Giants camp as far as their young head coach is concerned?
I really do think that they like what his approach and what he's bringing to the table. And you guys tell me if I'm wrong. He's almost paying for the sins of the past, because if the Giants weren't terrible the previous 3 years, I think we would have a little different view. Sure, 0-5 is 0-5. But we are seeing progress in certain directions, right, in certain areas. I mean, the defense has been surprisingly pretty good. You know, they're without Saquon Barkley. They're playing hard. This past week, they brought everything to the table. They pulled everything out of the bag. They did a fake field goal, which was almost a touchdown. I mean, you know, so I think there's a lot of things to like, and everyone's kind of bought it to Joe Judge. But from the outside perspective, he's almost paying a little bit for the sins of the past, because you want to say to Giants fans, be patient, right? We're getting better. The wins are going to come. But then Giants fans are sitting there, how long do we have to wait? We've been bad for 8 years. The better part of 8 years. We had one decent year in 8 years. The last 3 years, we've been god-awful. And now you have this new guy with this new regime coming in saying, hey, be patient. Look, we're getting better. I can see it. The wins are going to come. And that's a tough spot for him to be in. I mean, you guys tell me if I'm wrong. Is it hard to be patient if you're a Giant fan at this point, but knowing that you think Joe Judge has them going in the right direction?
I'm sure Dave's sick of being patient.
I'm sick of it. I mean, you're right.
It's not his fault.
That's the thing that's frustrating. It's not his fault. He's brand new here. He shouldn't have to pay for what's been the last couple of years. But, I mean, Jordan, how many times do we have to go over there? They're 12-40-whatever since the boat trip. And Gettleman's 9-30 or whatever it is at this point. Like, yeah, it's a lot of losing, Jordan. So do I blame Joe Judge? No, you don't blame him.
This is the exact dilemma.
I know.
Yeah, but Jordan, let me ask you a question. But Jordan, last one.
He's basing.
Jordan, let me ask you a question, though, and this is something that, you know, my Jets often make the mistake of doing. I mean, to Dave's point, you know, Joe Judge is kind of paying the price for, you know, the sins of everyone before him. But, I mean, is that the case if they just had clean house and got rid of Dave Gettleman? I mean, would that still be the topic of conversation if they had just completely, you know, new GM, new head coach, start fresh? Would we be having that conversation?
Yeah, we would be, because the bottom line is the results are what matter. And in the end, like, people don't want to even hear who the coach is, who the GM is. I mean, would there be less pressure on the general manager? Of course. But here's the thing. They're late on doing the rebuild.
Yep.
So now you have to say to your fan base, hey, we're rebuilding. Well, they're like, well, you should have rebuilt 3 years ago. So even if you have a new GM there, the fans are going to be losing patience, because – they're sitting there every Sunday, and I talked about this on the podcast with Dave. He's beat down. Like, Giants fans are beat down. They go into Sunday, they're like, ho-hum, they lose another terrible game, and you're able to just go, okay, they lost again, big deal, blah, 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 move on to the next thing. You know, and that's where the Giants fan base, for the most part, is right now. And it wouldn't matter who the GM is, it wouldn't matter who the head coach is, as long as the results on Sunday are you ending the day with an L, people are going to be frustrated and losing patience at this point.
Jordan, I know it's hard to play the hypothetical game, but based on people's feelings in the building about Joe Judge, if the Giants decide to move on from Dave Gettleman after this season, their next general manager will have to have a working relationship with Judge. He'll have to be able to work with Judge. Like, under no circumstances would the Giants consider finding another head coach?
Yeah, I really do believe that. I really believe that the – the way that this is going to end up going, knowing Joe Judge and the reaction he's gotten from everybody from the top down of the organization, is mm-hmm. that he's going to end up having input in who the general manager is. They're going to pair him up with basically his own guy. I mean, think about all the New England guys, right? Patricia's paired up with a New England guy in Detroit.
Yeah, Quinn, right?
Paired up with a New England guy in Tennessee. Bill O'Brien was paired up recently with a New England guy in Houston. Like, Joe Judge is a strong personality. He's not going to go in his maybe what could be his only head coaching, NFL head coaching chance, and be paired up with some random guy. He's going to push hard, I believe, to try and get one of his own guys. And the Giants are going to say, okay, maybe this is the best way to go because what we have been doing hasn't been working. And, you know, it's going to be, okay, here's your guy. It's the two of you. You're linked together. You have 2 or 3 years, whatever it is at that point, more years past this year, to get it going in the right direction and get it right. And I don't see how anything else makes logical sense at this point.
All right, Jordan. Listen, we got to run. We appreciate it. I'm sorry for the insults at the beginning. I thought it got cleaned up as we moved along, though. Thank you very much.
Jordan, make sure you stay away from Andrew Thomas, too. You know, it doesn't work out when you criticize offensive linemen that the Giants take in the top 10. Just saying.
Well, last time I didn't even criticize Eric Flowers, so this time I figure if I criticize Andrew Thomas, I might be in better shape.
Why did he attack you then?
He took offense to apparently I did a video with somebody else and the other person. I was just the host. The other person apparently criticized him, and he took offense to that. That was a year before he actually pushed me. So, it's one of those things where if you hold it in, when it comes out, it doesn't come out in the right way. I think that's what happened there.
Yeah, he was not happy. That's for sure. All right, Jordan, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Rick, you're dead to me. See you guys.
Love it.
The great thing, it wasn't even that it was funny, because it was funny. The delivery, though, was great. A 1987 rom-com.
He starred in the 1987 well American romantic comedy Roxanne.
George knows. You looked that up, right?
Yeah. Well, this is what happens when he's not on every week. It gives me too much time.
Oh, it was so well done. Now, this Saturday on ESPN TV, 4 lightweight title belts will be on the line in one match. Vasily Lomachenko.
It's a good fight tomorrow on Saturday. Good
will battle
fight.
Teofimo Lopez in Top Rank Boxing's biggest fight of the year. Coverage again 7:30 this Saturday on ESPN TV. Today on ESPN Daily, Chiefs safety Tyrann Mathieu has become the model defender in today's NFL, and he's faced his doubters on the path from LSU to Super Bowl champion. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you got your podcast. A lot of you guys have seen this from Jeremy Fowler at ESPN, the 3 destinations for one Le'Veon Bell. Rick, have you seen?
I did, yeah.
Dolphins, Bills, Chiefs. Jets' next 3 games, Dolphins, Bills, Chiefs.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? You can't make that up. So
over under 150 yards from scrimmage.
Oh, God. A loss to any of those 3 teams is painful enough. If Lev Bell goes off for 125 combined or 150, like Chris said, Rick, how much lower does it get?
See, I look at that as a positive. I mean, that right there would just reaffirm what we all think. I mean, how much clearer does Joe Douglas need to see it that Adam Gase isn't the guy?
Doesn't matter. Adam Gase ain't going nowhere.
For now.
All right. Okay.
You think he's going to stay on?
Guys, you know I said he should have been fired after week 2. You know I don't think Adam Gase should be the head coach of the New York Jets. I don't. I didn't like him when they hired him. But it's clear that he's entrenched in that organization. It's clear.
Oh, my
like
God.
Joe Douglas owes his job to him. Chris Johnson leans on him, relies on him to be his quote-unquote football guy, like Ricky alluded to yesterday. Like, guys, I don't know what it's going to take to oust this guy. And God forbid if the Jets go winless. If they go winless and they have the number 1 overall pick, I used to think it was outside of the realm of possibility that somehow Adam Gase could spin this on being Sam Darnold's fault and Mike Maccagnan's fault. Guys, I don't know.
He's trying his damnedest. I mean, that's what he's trying to do. I hope it doesn't work.
I hope it doesn't work either, but
there's no way
I don't
he's going to be back.
Nah, he's got to get fired.
I just can't envision that. I just can't.
I don't want him to be back. God, I don't think he deserves to have his job right now. All I'm saying is there's something going on over there. If it wasn't already obvious, what is it going to take for everybody to recognize that this is Adam Gase is doing?
Oh, God. Could you imagine?
If it's not already obvious, that's what I'm saying. I'm just asking, Dave. If it's not already blatantly obvious to you, what else is it going to take for everybody else in that organization to recognize that Adam Gase is the one that's responsible for the team being non-competitive this year?
Yeah.
I think it is blatantly obvious. I think the fact that it hasn't started, there's no one going to games. You don't have to worry about people not buying tickets. So it's not costing them money. I mean, it does kind of keep the Jets relevant that all we do is spend this time talking about how bad Adam Gase is.
So yeah, it's okay for your team to go out there and be non-competitive? Just because you can't have fans in the building, that's okay?
I don't think it's okay. I'm sick. Listen, we got to watch every single one of these games.
Yeah.
I got to watch Joe Flacco play quarterback again.
Yep.
I mean, have you seen some of these numbers, man, with this Jets offense? They're embarrassing.
Oh, they're terrible. Terrible.
Bottom
you watch
of the
every team, they go up and down for 400 yards. It's the Jets, and it's really, really bad. All right, we got CMT coming in about 5 minutes, so let's spend a couple minutes on the Yankees. Brian Cashman addressed the media yesterday. I thought the two most interesting sound bites, we'll take a listen to those. Firstly, his role in decision-making on this Yankees team.
We instituted our process that we've had in place now for feels like well over a decade, where everybody's going to have their say and suggestions for the manager to filter, and that's our process. And then ultimately, we try to find a way or suggested ways of, hey, you can climb this mountain this way, you can climb this mountain that way, or you can go basically what all the routes to try to get to the top of the mountain, which would be to victory. And then in the end, Aaron will decide with his staff what route he's most comfortable taking and what makes the most sense for him. And that's the way it's always been.
All right. So that's the decision making that the Yankees have as far as what they're going to do in the postseason and decisions. And we know some big ones this postseason. And I thought this was interesting in a while. We can get into this right after we hear the soundbite. He says, Aaron Boone is not a puppet.
I know there's that narrative. It's been asked several times about the manager being a puppet and all that. None of that's true. I've never ordered a manager to do anything specifically. Aaron would be able to testify to that, as well Joe Girardi and Joe Torre. They've never been directed at any time by me or our front office to do something that they didn't want to do. And simple as that. But I know I've said that before, and people want to believe whatever they want to believe. So I just know we have a good, strong, healthy, sound process, and one that we're proud of.
I'm sorry. It's hard for me to believe that is not a trickle-down of the analytics and Brian Cashman telling Aaron Boone. And he can say what he wants, but for me, and maybe I'm wrong, it's very difficult for me to believe that that's the case, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, listen, during that 2.5-hour press conference yesterday, they were trying to drive home the fact that Aaron Boone has the autonomy to manage the lineup and make in-game decisions as he sees fit. But Aaron Boone has always said it's a collaborative effort. So, of course, Brian Cashman has input into what he thinks the game plan should be, even as you get into the game, what decisions should be made. So, I mean, it's the two leaning on one another. But what I can't gather from what Brian Cashman is doing is whether or not he's supporting his manager or if he's trying to grease the skids in case this team continues to underachieve based on the expectations that Hal Steinbrenner has for this group. Like, I don't know if he's trying to distance himself or if he's trying to have Aaron Boone's back. I can't figure that one out. So maybe you guys can help me.
Well, I don't know if he's speaking to us. I don't think he's speaking to the fan base. The way he spoke yesterday almost leads me to believe like he's speaking to the clubhouse, like to the players in that clubhouse, like trying to reassure him that their manager is the one that makes these decisions.
Okay.
Because I'd have a hard time. Listen. I would have a hard time. Like, you could tell J-Hap was pissed, and he's a veteran guy in that clubhouse. Like, I mean, I've been in locker rooms where decisions like that get made, and you're sitting in the locker room going, there's no way our coach just made that decision. That is not a decision he would make. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you get into the conversation like, well, who's pulling the strings here? Is it him? Who's in charge? Because, I mean, you can spin it any way you want. He's not a puppet, but, I mean, this isn't like you're strongly suggesting to Aaron Boone what he should be doing.
There's no way that Aaron Boone came up with the idea of Davey Garcia starting game two and then bringing in J-Hap. There's no way he did that by himself.
No way.
No chance.
There's no way that Aaron Boone sat in a room and thought to himself, you know what would be great? If I start Davey Garcia, take him out after an inning, put in J-Hap. And if he did, if that was his, there's no way that the brass would have looked at it and said, this is a great idea. I'm sorry.
But he'd be stupid not to do what they suggest anyway. Like, he hasn't won anything yet. If he wants to keep his job, I mean, he's going to do what they tell him to do. Because then if it doesn't work out, it's not his fault. It's their fault. There's no way he's doing what Dusty Baker did yesterday, keeping Zach Greinke in that game. What'd you do? I looked him in the eyes, and then I walked back to the dugout and prayed. There's no chance Aaron Boone does something like that. Because if it doesn't work out, it's going to be his ass.
That's right. He's not allowed to.
Well, because he hasn't won anything yet to do it.
Yeah, but if they don't win a championship in the next couple of years, it's going to be his ass anyway, Rico.
It hasn't been Dave Roberts. And, I mean, you can point to certain decisions that he's made that have cost them World Series. And he got an extension.
But why do we play this game? Like this is all Aaron Boone's decision-making.
Because I think he's speaking to the clubhouse, man. If you're a player on a team, you don't feel like the coach is the one making the decisions, you've completely neutered your coach. And I think there was probably some conversation. Like, Aaron Boone, even if you were sold that idea with the analytics nerds and everything else, that this was a good idea, the second you sit down with Jay Happ, he's not all in on the plan's got to change. Either we're starting Jay Happ, he's going to pitch from the beginning of the game on, and then I'll have a short hook. Or this is a perfect opportunity to see what Davey Garcia can give us. And then we can figure out what we're going to use Happ later in the series. Maybe we use him for game four. That's the feel stuff that goes into being a manager. I don't care what analytics tell you.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong, but just the idea that Brian Cashman is speaking to the clubhouse when he's giving that message about Aaron Boone and his role. I mean, even if you're a guy in that clubhouse, are you really buying that? I mean, they let Girardi walk because they wanted somebody that had a softer touch, but they also wanted somebody that was going to be receptive to more of the input that Brian Cashman in the front office and the analytics department had. Not that Joe Girardi didn't use analytics, but I'm just saying in terms of wanting someone that would be more open to the ideas of laying out the in-game plan prior to.
Yeah, but forget softer touch, but I think it's also Joe Girardi. I mean, the guy's won a championship. So, I mean, I'm sure there was pushback. I mean, there were probably healthy conversations.
That's what I'm saying. So you don't think the guys in the locker room in the clubhouse already know that a lot of the stuff that they're doing is based on what Brian Cashman and his crew is coming up with? Brian Cashman addressed the team in Buffalo at the end of that streak where they lost 15 out of the last 20.
No, I think they know. I think they know, but I think they like Aaron Boone. But, I mean, there are certain things that happen that you just can't ignore. Like, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt that, you know what, this could be collaborative, but he's, you know, ultimately going to be the one that makes the decisions. If enough things happen, like, you know, all of a sudden Brian Cashman's the one that comes in and addresses the team, or we have this Fakakta game plan in game two. As a player on that team, as much as you like him, at some point you're like, no, this ain't right. Like Aaron Boone's supposed to have, like, he's supposed to protect us. He's supposed to have our back.
There should be more pushback if Jay Happ and Davey Garcia are both uncomfortable with that plan. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Again, I just, it's hard to believe.
But the players know that Aaron Boone didn't come up with that himself, though.
Of course they do.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think that there's anything that Brian Cashman could say about Aaron Boone and his ability to be, you know, or his autonomy to manage the team. I don't think there's anything that he can say to make the players feel differently about what they think his level of influence is in terms of how the game plan lays out.
No, very strange.
I just think that was Aaron Boone's opportunity to fight that decision, and he didn't do it.
I don't know. He could have fought the decision. All right, well, let's get more into the Yankees.
I would feel a way about it.
Well, you might feel a way, but if you want to keep your job, you're probably going to be a good soldier.
No,
shut up.
I'm not saying Aaron Boone. If I was one of the players on the team, yeah, I would feel a way about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I can't go to Brian Cashman and tell him to go kick rocks. We're not doing this. That's what the manager's supposed to do. He's the in-between. You can't preach that you have our back, and then all of a sudden a decision like this is being made, and you don't have our
Boone's
back.
Boone's in a very tenuous situation. He's the middleman, and he can't look up and say, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. He won't be here next year.
No, that's something that I would have a hard time respecting that.
No, I think that it's a difficult situation with the Yankees. All right, let's do a little CMT. We need a little lightening of the mood, a little music, a little CMT. Here we go.
All right, here we go. This is what we're going to do. You're going to love this. What I'm going to do is, because you ate up all my time yesterday with Nobservations, I'm going to put them together in a fun little Nobservation one with some CMT.
Okay.
You're going to love this. All right. quickly, before we get into CMT, did this happen in Florida? I got to tell you the story because I was sent it, and I love it. Thought criminals were stupid? Well, I can one-up that. According to investigators, two men, 141 and 123, weren't very hard to find as they were breaking into stores, stealing cigarettes and lottery tickets. Why weren't they hard to find? Because they would leave things around during their crime spree, like a shoe, some tools, and best of all, one of them left behind his wallet with his driver's license.
Oh, come on.
So the deputies went to his house and knocked on the door. The guy confessed.
Oh, my God. He left
him. 14 charges combined. Him and his buddy. 14 charges combined for grand theft and burglary.
I'm going to say Florida. Yeah, that does sound like Florida to me.
Christopher Kenny.
I'm going to go along with Dave, but here's the thing. How many tools do you need to break into the store if you're only going to steal cigarettes and lotto tickets?
Yeah, why are you leaving your shoe behind?
Your wallet behind.
Why are you bringing your wallet in the first place?
Exactly.
In case you get pulled over by the police.
In case you get stopped. In case I get carded for the booze and cigarettes that you're stealing.
Right. I am 21, in fact.
Santi. Florida or not Florida? What'd you say?
Florida man strikes again.
Florida man strikes again. You are correct. That is Florida. That is Ocala, yes. Florida.
Yes.
Here we go, boys. CMT. Dave's loaded AFC. Best team right now in the AFC. I'm going to give you the Kansas City Chiefs, the Baltimore Ravens, or the Tennessee Titans.
Right now?
Right now as we speak.
Tennessee? I'll marry them.
Ooh.
Let's go.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Right now, Tennessee is the best team in the AFC. And then I will cuddle Kansas City, and I'll trash Baltimore.
Look at this garbage.
Well, there's just no way I'm going to do that. So I am going to cuddle Baltimore as the best team in the AFC.
Wow.
I still think Lamar Jackson's got to figure out how to play from behind, how to win from the pocket consistently. But I think he'll do that as he matures. I am going to marry Kansas City because at his best, Pat Mahomes is the best football player on the planet. And I am going to trash Tennessee. I don't know, man. Still something about that team. I don't necessarily believe in them making a championship run.
Wow.
Just don't.
I don't know how, though.
He doesn't believe in Ryan Tannehill. He won't say it, but he doesn't. Because he doesn't believe in Ryan Tannehill.
All right.
Canty's not bought in yet. He doesn't realize the effect that Adam Gase has on quarterbacks. All right, most impressive win of Week 5. Was it the Raiders beating Chris's Kansas City Chiefs? Was it the Dolphins destroying San Francisco in San Francisco, or was it Dave's favorite Tennessee Titans in what they did against Buffalo?
Okay, well, that's where I'll give Tennessee credit. I'll marry them just because when you don't have the opportunity to have preparation like they did, only having two practices and then going out and demolishing an undefeated team, I mean, just embarrassing them when you're the only game on television that night, that was impressive to me. 42-16, that'll get you married as the most impressive victory.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm going to cuddle the Raiders win over the Chiefs. I just think that was big for Derek Carr in proving to everybody that he could push the ball downfield because they out-chiefed the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was big play after big play after big play. And for an organization and a head coach that's been kind of non-committal on Carr, I thought that win went a long ways to solidifying him and his position for the Raiders. And then what was the other game?
Miami-San Francisco.
You can
Miami
trash that. Trash
garbage. Look at this garbage.
Yeah, I'm also going to trash Miami. Not that it wasn't a nice win. It was. But San Fran, outside of playing the Jets and Giants, hasn't shown a whole heck of a lot this season. So I'll trash Miami.
Garbage. Look at
I'll
this
cuddle
garbage.
Tennessee.
Bombs and
great
win.
Seeds. But what the Raiders did, going into Kansas City, and putting up a 40 spot on the Chiefs and beating what we all thought was by far and away the best team in the NFL, that's marriage material. I'm married.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
All right, we have time for one more or no?
One more, yeah, go ahead.
All right, here we go. Sexiest game of Week 6. Sexiest game. I mean,
you're not going to put Giants-Washington here, are you?
No, I was going to put Jets-Miami. Let me erase that quickly. I'm going to give you Cleveland at Pitt. I'm going to give you Green Bay at Tampa Bay and Kansas City at the wounded Buffalo Bills.
All right. I'm gonna marry Kansas City and Buffalo. Buffalo was kind of wounded.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'd like to see how they rebound. I'd like to see how Kansas City rebounds. Those are two high-powered offenses. I'll marry that one. I'm going to cuddle Cleveland
Bombs and
Pittsburgh.
Seeds.
I think it's a great game, and I think Cleveland might be for real. And I'm going to trash Tom Brady. I don't think they're good. I'm sorry. You lose to the Bears? Awful. Awful. I think Tampa has real troubles. They almost lost to the Chargers, trailed that game 24-7. I'm going to trash it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I'm going to trash the Battle of the Bays as well. I am going to marry Cleveland and Pittsburgh. And I know Mike Tomlin said he doesn't want any reality TV storylines, but there's bad blood between these two teams. And what they want to be is very interesting. I mean, the Cleveland Browns want to be a physical team that pounds the football on you. And the Pittsburgh Steelers' strength on defense is that front seven. So I just think that this sets up for a really interesting matchup. I'm going to marry that one. I'll cuddle KC and Buffalo. Bombs, I think it's interesting to teams that are going to be in the playoffs. But I think both of these teams at their best, Kansas City's better. But I'll cuddle it.
All right, there you go, boys. Thursday edition, CMT.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.